extremely volatile. Thus, its movements are powerful and extreme, and they greatly affect activity in many other areas. And all these things are exacerbated by the swings of psychology described in chapters 7 and 8. Please note that the subject here is sometimes referred to as the capital market cycle rather than the credit cycle. I don't find the distinction important. Strictly speaking, capital refers to all the money used to finance a business, while credit refers to that portion of a company's capital that's made up of debt rather than equity. In practice, these two cycle names seem to be used interchangeably, although I do find many fewer references to the capital market cycle. I'm going to stick to the credit cycle when I am only talking about debt markets, and I may lapse into the capital market cycle when I'm talking about the general availability of financing. But either way, and most importantly, the considerations that apply to one apply equally to the other. The following passage from my memo, Open and Shut, December 2010, calls on some of what I wrote earlier and places the credit cycle in context within the range of cycles. Consider this. The ups and downs of economies are usually blamed for fluctuations in corporate profits, and fluctuations in profits for the rise and fall of securities markets. However, in recessions and recoveries, economic growth usually deviates from its trendline rate by only a few percentage points. Why then do corporate profits increase and decrease so much more? The answer lies in things like financial leverage and operating leverage, which magnify the impact on profits of rising and falling revenues. And if profits fluctuate this way, more than GDP, but still relatively moderately, why is it that the securities markets soar and collapse so dramatically? I attribute this to fluctuations in psychology, and in particular, to the profound influence of psychology on the availability of capital. In short, whereas economies fluctuate a little and profits a fair bit, the credit window opens wide and then slams shut. Thus, the title of this memo. I believe the credit cycle is the most volatile of the cycles and has the greatest impact. Thus, it deserves a great deal of attention. And here's how I put it more succinctly in You Can't Predict, You Can Prepare, November 2001. The longer I'm involved in investing, the more impressed I am by the power of the credit cycle. It takes only a small fluctuation in the economy to produce a large fluctuation in the availability of credit, with great impact on asset prices and back on the economy itself. Changes in the availability of capital or credit constitute one of the most fundamental influences on economies, companies, and markets. Even though the credit cycle is less well known to the man on the street than most of the other cycles discussed in this book, I consider it to be of paramount importance and profound influence. As suggested in the citation just above, the credit cycle can be easily understood through the metaphor of a window. In short, sometimes it's open and sometimes it's closed. And in fact, people in the financial world make frequent reference to just that, the credit window, as in the place you go to borrow money. When the window is open, financing is plentiful and easily obtained. And when it's closed, financing is scarce and hard to get. Finally, it's essential to always bear in mind that the window can go from wide open to slammed shut in just an instant. There's a lot more to fully understanding the cycle, including the reasons for these cyclical movements and their impact. But that's the bottom line. Why does this cycle have the importance I ascribe to it? First, capital or credit is an essential ingredient in the productive process. Thus, the ability of companies and economies to grow usually depends on the availability of incremental capital. If the capital markets are closed, it can be hard to finance growth. Second, capital must be available in order for maturing debt to be refinanced. Companies, as well as most other economic units, such as governments and consumers, generally don't pay off their debts. Most of the time, they merely roll them over. But if a company is unable to issue new debt at the time that its existing debt comes due, it may default and be forced into bankruptcy. Where we stand